Hey, how are you, Haley?
Oh, I'm all right. I've just been working along here on the cases again, and
Okay.
I've been nonstop. I don't think there's been ever. Oh, the police gave me a new name, by the way. We used to joke when I was in the fraud squad there, because
Yeah.
the cops that are undercover are called plainclothes.
Yes.
So I said, well, I gave my name Old Clothes because I wear the same clothes.
Yes.
Anyway, now the last one I spoke to them, they said, who are you? And I said, well, I'm kind of like the Brasco fellow, Donnie Brasco.
Yeah.
So the guy said, oh, you mean you're like a Donna Brasco? I said, right on. Right on, right?
Okay. So that's
I
your new name?
probably, what? My new name is Donna Brasco. Cops gave it to me.
Okay, I
Isn't
like it.
that cool, eh?
Yes.
Holy moly. Exactly. I probably had more ability to infiltrate than anybody, right in the center hub of the guy who does the hits, subcontracts them. What they do is a pyramid system, so no one really knows who ordered the hits. The same thing as the JFK. Very, very important that they did that, right? This is what they call organized crime. Everything is worked out that it never comes back to them. They get all kinds of fools saying, "Hey, do you want to do a contract? Get you 75,000. Oh, cool, right?" The person then doesn't know who actually does the hit in the end. Because that's the way it came out in JFK with David Ferry's famous lines. Remember his lines? And then Enigma, and on he goes. I'll get the famous words out there. But anyway, are you on the internet and you could Google Map something?
Yes.
Okay, so the little girl that was killed that I told you about that had that reed stuck right up her
Right.
vagina.
Yeah.
That's the sick one. That happened on May the 24th. That was 19, approximately 19, I think it was 80, what he said to me. Now, it's around the same time period, just before of what's going on with Aaron Harrison Gilmore, right? There's a pattern here, and I'm trying to show this pattern that they're one horrific case after another. But there's no, it's not like a serial killer that does children only. He does anything, everything, and that's a diversionary tactic again. Anyway, the Google map is to shooter S. HUTERS.
What do how do I get there, Haley? Do I go to Google Map? Is that what I have to do?
That's it. You go into Google Map or mapsgoogle.com.
Okay. Okay. All right.
Mapsgoogle.com.
All right.
Then you put shooter, SHUTER, street. And
Okay,
then
just a
you use.
second. Just a second.
Sure.
God, I don't know. This ran me to something completely different.
Oh,
Do
yeah,
I need to
SHUTER
do this?
street. Well, I just wanted to show you the long trip that he took to her death. A
Oh.
long trip.
Okay, I'm
A long.
Google Maps, and now what you want me to put in?
Yeah, shooter, SHUTER street. SHUTER street.
Shooter
And then.
Street in Toronto.
Right, but then you before that, and then you put and, or like parentheses, or spell it out, Schumach, Schumach Street, and then you put comma, Toronto, Ontario.
All right.
Okay. So
Shooter and is it Shooter and Sumac Street?
That's right. Shooter Street. The way I put it in, Shooter Street and Sumac Street, Toronto, Ontario, with a comma after Sumac Street, comma after Toronto and Ontario. It should pop up.
I got Shooter Street, comma, Sumac Street, comma, Toronto, comma, Ontario, comma.
No, I didn't put any commas there. I just put Shooter Street and Sumac Street because then it brings you to the corner of Shooter Street and Sumac Street. Don't
Toronto,
put any
Ontario.
Commas there.
Okay.
Toronto, right. Shooter Thanks. Shooter Street and Sumac Street.
No, it said they weren't able to locate that. Is it S-U-M-A-T? S-H-U-T-E-R?
What, Sumac?
Shooter. S-H-U-T-E-R.
Yeah, S-H-U-T-E-R, Street.
And Sumac, S-U-M-A-C.
That's right. S-U-M-A-C-H. Sorry. S-U-M-A-C-H, Street.
Oh, H. Okay, let's see if that works.
M-A-C-H, Sumac.
Yeah, okay, I got it.
So the corner comes, and there's a, if you get it, with the, on the far left, Shooter Street, it shows like a little, what do you call it, a red brick building on the left side in the.
Oh, yeah, uh-huh.
See that? Okay, now you go in, and you put the finger there on the A on the, on the satellite map. Do you have the satellite map? Put the satellite map. Get the satellite map so you see where I'm coming from.
Oh, yeah, here's the satellite map.
Okay, so I see the satellite map.
Yep.
Right on that corner, I'm going to walk you through where he had abducted her, okay, what he said to me. On that corner is a little park called Stinky Park. And why it's called Stinky is there's a tenement, like a building across where a lot of niggers, he said again, live, and that's why it was branded Stinky Park by the kids themselves. Can you believe that? Anyway, on the one side of the street, there's like an electrical in the green. There's a little convenience store. That's where he said he got the candy and ice cream for her from. Then he walked her out of the park. You can see.
How old was she?
The little girl?
Yeah.
She was at age six. Age six, so she didn't have her street smarts, right?
Yeah.
Now, the reason he said he did it is because the family were into drugs and they were facing court and they had actually given testimony or something, so this was like a payback, right? Like I say, they hit your kids. You do damage to the mob, they take you out. So anyway, if you look at that Shooter Street, it says Trafan Court. Do you have the satellite map almost? And then you see Shooter. So he walked her through from Stinky Park over to River Street, which is
see River Street.
Right, and then down, go down south. And you see Queen Street East. Do you see Queen Street East?
Yeah, uh-huh.
Okay. So Clyde used to do the route as a streetcar driver along Queen Street. Now, as you go down river, you see Queen Street East, you would start walking you keep walking east, and you see Bayview Avenue, and then you see these yellow highway called the Don Valley Parkway.
Let's see. I see the Don Valley Parkway.
Okay, it's in yellow.
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to hone you in from where she was walking, but I want you to, like, I want everyone to, you know, if anyone's listening, to walk that long walk she took to her death. It takes a long time when you Google go through the streets, right?
Mm-hmm.
But this is like a shortcut to show you where she ended up. Now we get to the Don Valley Parkway there, or whatever.
Yeah.
Just a little before that, there's on one side, it's called the, let me see to get here. It's called the West Don Roadway. On the east side, it's called the East Don Roadway. And it's right there. There's a bridge that is right at where the yellow highway is, so mm-hmm. we get our bearings.
Mm-hmm.
Now, on that bridge is a little opening where staircases go down. And they go down, and he walked her along the river, the Don River, by the railway tracks. And her death was, I'll show you where. Oh, my God. It makes, this is what, this, it hurts my heart over and over. I can't fathom any monster doing this to anyone.
Right? I know.
I just, when I look at the, you know, why do we have these? And it's all because of Hollywood. I said, where do you get the sickness from? But they trained him to be this most ruthless killer. Ruthless. Like I said, in the end, they wanted to put the cobalt bombs, the super frack or whatever, you know, explosives they can take down the, what do you call it, the San Andreas Fault to take down America. I mean, this was the game plan. And I told you the heavy hitter who I saw meeting with that head mobster. Now, the mobster was taken down, who was the top Camisso in Italy. He was known as Giuseppe Master, in quotes, the Master Camisso. They just took him down a few years back, in Italy. And they confiscated all their lands and everything. That was a major hit in Italy that they took this Giuseppe, spelled Giuseppe, Master Camisso. So, in order to become a master hitman, you have to be so ruthless, so sickening all the time, that you have to keep on having no conscience and doing the hit after hit. One time he said to me, you never know if you're going to be the one that is taken out, because all of these guys are always packing, he says. So that's when he said that when they passed that gun to Chad Winter, he said to me he was packing major big, because they passed that, you know, the whatever gun that they would use in a scene of crime, they pass it to the blacks, as he said, to the niggers, so everyone thinks it's a nigger who did it, right? And on and on, it just goes on. But anyway, that you can't see the little path, steps down that bridge unless you start going into zoom in.
Yeah.
Now, if you start zooming in, I just move the zooming map, so then you see the shooter closer. The red A sign is still, and there's quite a bit of green just around it where it says Shooter Street. That's the little stinky part.
Right.
We'll hone into that a little later, but then up river, they had seen, people had actually seen him walk the little girl, right?
Mm-hmm.
Down River Street and over to Queen Street.
Mm-hmm.
And then down this little, there's an opening that goes into this little pathway, and it's called, let me see if it shows up. I have to go in a second time with zoom in. Okay, now we see it. Yeah, well, the second time you hit it, you'll see the Lower Donway Recreational Trail. And that's what he walked her along.
This is just so awful.
Right, and then you hone in one more time. We did it once, right? Twice?
I'm not sure how to hone in.
Okay, what I did is I moved the
red arrow.
There's the circle, yeah. And I moved over from River Street. So I started, but I moved over once and then twice. So I'm now, I've got the Queen and the Don Valley Parkway where the yellow highway.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I just closed it up. I got it.
Okay. Now, by the time you get honing in, you can actually see where the opening of that bridge is. So you go Queen Street East, and then you see the Bayview Avenue, and then you see Dawn Recreational Trail.
I see East Dawn Roadway. Yeah,
but on the other side is the
The Lower Dawn Recreational Trail, yeah.
Okay, that's what he took her down. There's a little opening. So he walked her all the way to her long death. And when you do this using the Google buttons, going, you know, like through the trail, mm-hmm. it's sickening. Imagine, mm-hmm. imagine the way that, you know, this girl was wasted. And then you start, then you go use the little click, and then you go to Bayview.
Bayview.
And then if you pan down once, you see Eastern Avenue. Then you pan down one more time, and then you see again. Then you pan to the right, and then you see the old Eastern Avenue Bridge. In that area there, I'm going to go there physically because he kept pointing it to me all the time as he went up the Don Valley Parkway, and he used the old Eastern. He took me there a few times in the middle of the night. I thought he was going to take me back because he loves to relive his brutal crimes. It just makes him get off on these things. It is so sick. And this individual is allowed to drive a streetcar. That is where I want to take the City of Toronto TTC down with, and the police. They have covered it up so many years, and that's why you have all these unsolved crimes. But they're horrific. These people are wondering, you know, why isn't Lizzie Tomlinson on the cold case file of the Toronto police? Why isn't Salvador Trombardi the one I was yelling about? Why isn't Filippino Vendamini? Why isn't Bruno Sidel? And on, right? And all these. And then, Steve Ryan asked me, wasn't Wayne Millett or, oh, yeah, those haven't been solved, have they? I said, no, they haven't. It never went through the court case, right? And you got the wrong man. Carol Voice was four, and she was the little girl under the, Prince Edward Viaduct. And that was just a little after Gary Morris. Carol Voice, I'll spell it, Carole Voice, Voyce. She was four. That went. Now, that was 56, so that's what's so disgusting. The first there was, these aren't the first that Clyde had done, okay? I'll take you through all the ones that I know about. So that's where the police don't even go into that. It was Wayne Millett, 7 years, and that was September the 15th, 1956, on a Saturday. And then that was the little boy I saw on Saturday, October the 6th, 1956. I watched as Clyde killed that kid in our backyard, Gary Morris, age 9. He tried to kill me at that time, abducted me on a stupid bicycle. And that's what they started looking for en masse. The police were looking for the perpetrator with this bike.
Well, how old was Clyde? He was only in his teens.
That's right. So I'm 10 and he's 13.
And he's already murdering people?
Oh, yeah. He was I asked him this question. When was the first time you felt to kill? 4, he said, the age of 4. I said, 4? Holy moly, that's pretty young. I said, what did you do? He said, I took up a rock bigger than myself. I could barely hold it because I was so angry. And I wanted to kill my sister.
Oh my God.
I threw it at her. I threw it at her. And it's, the sister told me the story too. It's wounded her in the jaw. And she's got a scar for the rest of her life. So that was his first attempt at killing.
Good God.
He hates the sister, yeah.
It's
horrific. Anyway, the ones I'll tell you, there were quite a few ones going back to Judy Carter prior to, I won't go there right now to go all, but it was Judy Carter, and then It was a little girl in the same area where the, Prince Edward Viaduct, where Carol Voice was, that nobody knows about. And it was Margaret McBray. Yeah, they smeared it on another kid, just like they did the Peter Woodcock, and he didn't do it. Someone had seen him with a stupid pouch. He had a pouch, he said to me, that was, you know, his Toronto Star collection, you know, for the money, for the... Someone had seen him, Margaret McRae, and she was kept overnight where he beat her all the time with a stick. Hmm? This is a vicious, vicious predator.
How old was he then?
Well, that was like Margaret McRae was in 1955, so that would make Clyde at that point 12. Right, Margaret,
This is unbelievable.
This is the way. You know, this is unbelievable that people don't understand. They do kill animals. They do torture them. I had to bury all the squirrels and pigeons that were killed in our backyard. I'm sure the skeletons are still there that I buried. That's what they did all the time. And I was target practice on the swing. They used to all the time use their guns to see if they could kill me in the backyard. One time I had to jump over the back fence and then run to, this lady, this German lady where my sister was staying at, because my mother used to put her in safekeeping until he picked her up. I blame my mother for the whole thing, that she wasn't, strong enough to make a move. No one had any money. That first year... In 1956, what they did was they cut off her electricity. So that whole winter, I lived in darkness, no heat. Can you imagine?
Good God.
How do you fathom to do anything?
Good God.
You know? Jesus Christ. Do you know how I kept warm? My mother bought a little Coleman stove, and she used to heat it and put hot water into the bottles, and then, you know, like a towel underneath, and that was warming my feet, just so we would have. And we lived through that whole winter. I tell you, I've been a captive of the CIA agents all of my life. And I'm now how old? And I want a resolution to this. This is so sick. But anyway, I wanted everyone to see that. He walked her through this pathway. Now, I've been too scared to go down there by myself to photograph it from where he showed me. But I'm going to have that exact point that he pointed out time and time again. And this was all the time to scare me when he took me back from his 2494 Callum, Callum, in Mississauga. He would always take me up the Don Valley, the Gardner Expressway, and up the Don Valley Expressway, pointing out where he left the Lizzie Tomlinson every time we went by there. So when I go to see Detective Sergeant Tony Smith, I'm hoping that he would help me as an old lady. You get my drift?
Of course.
I mean, his job as a detective is in the homicide squad is to solve cases, not to give me a hard time and not to start it going into denial. And, you know, for him to say, never heard about that case, you know, about an old lady that had her eyes gouged out. Henning, that happened Saturday, September the 20th, 1975. Her first name is A-L-E-T-H-I-A, middle name Jane. And she ran a small little, a restaurant and, a service station, he said. And he went in there and smashed her skull. The autopsy report, I'm sure, is wonderful, you know. Eyes gouged out. Dismembered, you know. He was trying to disembowel her, he said to me.
Why did he kill her?
I would suspect that the motive they said that he said came in the newspaper said it wasn't robbery. A lot of these things are done because they maybe want the land, right? She was a widow, so I want to see the paperwork of who bought that land right after. That's what I think the motive is, because he didn't give me a motive of why he did that old lady. And I tell this story maybe two or three times to Detective Sergeant over and over. I don't know if they filled me in that room, you know, in the it's kind of like a room where I'm sure there's cameras in all angles, you know, and I related that story and over, you know, telling it that he did the old Stooges trick, pointed up into the ceiling so the woman looks up, and then he said he hit her in the solar plexus, right in the stomach. So she grabbed her stomach, then put his two fingers into her eyeballs, and then pulled backwards to gouge them out. I mean, and I tell this to Detective Sergeant Tony Smith.
Oh God!
And then I talk about the case of the guy that was dismembered that lived down the hallway where he lives. And then Detective Sergeant Tony Smith says to me, "There's no case like that ever been heard of a dismembered person in High Park on Springbank Road." Well, I said, "It's in your coroner stuff, I'm sure." And then slowly it popped up, right, that I found it because I was trying to. He took me to that spring bank, took me through into the park, and he showed me where he disposed of the body parts and threw the penis to the ducks.
God.
Holy shit. I mean, this is like I told you, I had to do it. Nobody else could. Nobody solved these crimes. Why are they in the cold case files? Somebody had to get the goods. And I, you know, when I first started this, I had phoned, like I said, Peter Henry from the fraud squad, told him, look, he started talking about Frank Roberts. Frank Roberts, a guy who invented the Obis form. And I just went at it. I said, he said, I killed Frank Roberts, John Sakura, Cosimo Lombardo, Filippino Mandamini, Carmen Alfano, and on, he just rattled all of the names so fast, it was like he must have gone through 100. And then I heard, you know, and I knew Filippino Mandamini, I knew, right? It all hit back to what I knew, but it was almost like, you know, when I gave them the first part of my statement, I said, look, there must have been at some point so much trauma, and I asked that of my family doctor, what's happened that I, have lost the thread? And he said, in cases of trauma, of immense trauma that you've lived, in order for the brain and the body to survive through it, it tries to go into a decompartmental stage, right? And then a key word, like he used the word vice, and then I thought, oh my God, it came back to the dumb bullet and all about the Kennedy, you know. So that's the way I started. When he started giving me like one information after another, it all came back. And then what I thought I'd do, right, is try to find these things, like little bits of stuff. And I said, did you ever have any remorse? And then he tells me, yeah, I went to, when I was trying to rob a taxi driver, and the guy started crying, I have kids, and he said he made him cry. And then he said to go and confess. And then I said, what did you do? And he said he ran up the church's step, but the door was locked. God locked him out. I found that on the front page of the Toronto Star. I will show that to you how I did it. Through years and years of what he said to me, I needed to prove this case. I kept going to the cops and saying, what the hell do you need? So I photographed his walkie-talkie, right? I photographed the damn gun, the stolen goods, and everything, and I kept laying the information. I called the paintings that he had on his wall. all the way to Sweden. He stole and did that with his son Paul. Bjorn Borg's paintings. He had them hanging on his wall. Bjorn Borg. Get that, because Bjorn Borg wanted to collect some insurance. So when I called the Bjorn Borg's agent, they didn't want any part of it. They wanted the insurance money. They didn't want to know where the paintings were. Can you imagine that? What do you need for evidence to get in there, a search warrant? A body?
He stole paintings from Bjorn Borg because Bjorn Borg wanted insurance money for them?
Yeah. So on the wall, one of them had the, the signature, and I photographed it, and I brought it to the attention of the police. I brought it in to Tony Smith. I gave it to the Crime Stoppers, everything. Then Tony Smith said, don't you call that Crime Stoppers again. Don't you call any police. I got threats.
For solving crimes.
Trying to solve a crime. And then he told me, and it was him and the Mark Mendelson, a homicide. Now he's, again, they get into positions. This is what they do, how diabolical these police are. And what they become is a consultant or, a private investigator. Then they'll go on these investigations and waylay, the police will waylay the solving of siblings who take a private eye on it, who's an ex-cop. And the cop starts milking the family for money and just waylaying it again. It's like done over and over to the victim families. Victim families have enough money to hire a private eye. That's sick. Do you understand? So that's why when that guy phoned me up and said, watch your back. I just can't fathom this. It's why have all of these cases not been solved in the Toronto Police Force, the York Regional Police, the Ottawa Police, the Vancouver Police, the Edmonton Police?
Well,
he's gone all over Canada.
I've been told it's because he's protected.
Exactly. And he said from the highest, his file is classified. They don't want to go there. Bottom line, the victim families will go after the collection of a wrongful death. It would put the city of Toronto into chaos that a hitman has been working. The TTC and using TTC vehicles like the Wendy Tedford, Donna Stern. Do you know when I've just called these cops right now, right? They say, I'll call you back tomorrow, and they don't. I call. Oh, yeah, well, we'll talk about it, in January. Let's see if I'll live to January. I'll have a rotten mafia after my ass. I'll have everyone from jihadist after my ass. This is, why do these crimes are not solved? Because we have to have sick news on a daily basis. Imagine if it's only the sun is shining tomorrow, and sun will shine again tomorrow, and then the next day. Oh, it's not shining today. No, we're fed this Hollywood stuff. Mutilation here, kids murdered there, and then we get traumatized, and people forget. Who did it? Was it an inside job? And then, I can't believe this latest with this. The guy ran into the woods. And then this, the one who's saying it, there's stuff now being perpetrated on the internet that's saying this, that, and the other thing. Well, what if there was with the first reports? It's the same thing as what happened with the JFK murder. First of all, they said there was a Mauser that they found, right? How did it end up to be a Mannlicher Cartano? All of that stuff should be scrutinized of why this didn't work. Anyway, now I'm going to get out of that area, but I was thinking, do you want to go down, or it's a long trip? We'll do that another time, just to go down where this little Lisa Tomlinson walk. But anyway, if you go back to the shooter and that, it's still on there at the same way, just snap into it at the bottom, like, and then the street gets underlined at the far left-hand side, Shooter Street and Sumac. And then you click on it, and then comes a map. But then you click on the red red little A.
I'm trying to figure out.
Anyway, I just wanted you to see the stinky park.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I got it now. So it hones in, and you see a sort of like a green area, and then you go under, it says Street View.
And you're better at using this thing than I am.
Oh, okay. Haley. Well, that's the way. This is the way that I've now, all of the unsolved crimes that I know about have done to show where they happened based on what he showed me. And some, you know, like I said, the ones that I was actually a witness to, witness to were the ones there. I said Elizabeth Kirby Boyington, Lorne Gibson, and the kid ones that I saw him abduct, Patricia Lupton, Lupton, in March the 9th, 1959.
Why'd he do her?
Basically, it looks like a payback. Payback again. Patricia Lupton. So he played that Mr. Johnson game. And the way he did the Patricia Lupton, and then he did also the Julian Walensky. I'll spell it to you. I'm so tired here today. Julian Walensky is Walanski. So, but anyway, Stinky Park is there, and I just wanted you to see. He walked this girl from this park, and the same way he walked this girl from the park, the Cindy Williams, right? Cindy Williams was younger than Lisa Tomlinson. But these child mutilation cases don't end here. They go into Quebec. He did the same thing. He did three kids in one day. Oh, I tell you, I just want to take this down to the point of raising, the revolution happening. It's just, to me, it makes me so sick when police go into denial and do nothing, and then wonder why we have this jihad problem here, right? This major. It's a fight of people brutally mutilating each other on and on for land. And, anyone that
a lot of these murders,
in the way.
A lot of these murders are being done for land.
Oh, yeah. I would say the land part of it, I'll show you which land. I would suspect from what Clyde said, that he wanted the Athena Jane Hennings land. Who got that property? I want to find out. In Ayton, Ontario, that Saturday, September the 20th, 1975, that's a poor lady that had her eyeballs gouged out and all of her entrails out on the... Oh, my God. And this, I called... When he first told me, it was February the 14th, Valentine's Day, when he told me, and I had to call the police. It was so sick, and the police that came there, they looked at the bottles, that were in the kitchen, and they thought I was drunk. I said, that's not my bottles, those are Clyde's. He's a drunk, and he relives his diabolical, nightmares of his killings over and over and over in his head. And this he told me about the eyeballs on Valentine's Day.
God.
So the cops looked at each other, you know. They never heard of any case of the eyeballs gouged out. This should be eyeballs gouged out. Look in the internet. Any victim eyeballs gouged out? So when they said, well, what's her name? What's the date that she died? I said, look, he didn't tell me, but I'll go back and ask him. And that's where I got it from, right? Because they were so, you know, all they want, date, please. Can I have the date? Name? Huh? What the freaking hell are we talking about here? Date? Name? That's only the way that they work? Why are all the cops in Toronto oblivious to this shit? Why do I have to talk to Mike Amato, who's head of the intelligence? Why does he not know about all the cold case unsolved? Every single cop that ever becomes a cop and raises up the ranks has to know, as far as I'm concerned, every single unsolved crime everywhere has a goddamn course. And I'm going to bring it down to almost nil in Canada when I'm through with these bastards, right? I can't believe it. I can't believe what I had to go through to try to get one cop. And the one cop that said, hey, man, I'm glad we clicked in, was Mark Burke, and they didn't let it happen between him and I. Get that? He was killed as well.
He was the one who was saying... He was the one who was sent to Haiti.
That's right. I can't believe it. You know, it was disgusting. Just disgusting. But anyway, so when I started, you know, like the cops would say to me that Tony Smith said, you know, Haley, you're not scared enough. You're not scared enough? What do they want me to do? Cry? I cried enough of a million tears when I didn't have any police officers help me when I was a kid. Imagine me, as a kid of 10, begging a cop on the corner of the street to help me. You know, the guy, he didn't know what I was talking about. So when I got a bit, you know, like I said, what happened that day with the Patricia Lupkin, and I told my mother about the guns and all that, then I went and told the cop, my mother... and I, because the cop said, look, we can't get into your house. We don't have a search warrant. So, I walked my mother and myself, bringing as many guns and knives and Enfields and Mausers and everything that we can possibly give to the cops. They didn't put the hardware in there. They didn't put the hardware. My brother was already a seasoned gun runner. Oh, my God. Anyway, they gave me this lame, corrupt cop by the name of Adolphus Payne. I'll go through that another day. But anyway, I'm getting tired here. It's Christmas Eve. I have to talk about murders. But anyway, the other, you know, the cases he showed me, they go into the York Regional Police there. Yvonne LaRue. Now, this is the same as what Aaron Harrison Gilmore was. She lived in fear. Aaron started getting death threats, just like I did, when you least expect that you're going to die. So anyway, what happened? She was only 16, and they found her body, and Clyde showed me where he brought her, right? It's just north of this, it's along Jane, but it's along a place, and it's called, it's King Side Road, and it's north of there, and I'll Google you on another day where they found her. But anyway... What happened is the Metro Drug Squad were contacted by this girl, and she begged the police. She begged, like I did, right? She begged the Toronto Drug Squad for protection because she was in fear of her life. Can you imagine that, right? She goes to beg the police, I fear for my life. So they say, why? So the York Regional Police say that she's involved with, you know, Clyde said she was involved in the drug scene with the Camisos and stuff, and she was being told to become a runner, like one who does drop-offs, and she didn't go for it. And she said, I want protection. I didn't follow what they wanted me to do. And she's only 16. So anyway, what Clyde says is they put a surveillance. For how long, I have no idea. But anyway, when the surveillance dropped or whatever, he moved in. He abducted her off the street, showed me where he abducted her. And then he left her body right in this very small, it's green land, very sparsely used up there, right on the street in the cold, threw her on the, on her face right there. She was beaten to a pulp. And, it's so sick when he told me this. And I think he was doing this because he was getting his rocks off. He'd drive me through these places, probably looking where he could do me in. But if he'd use his own car, and that's why that one time, probably what saved me was that helicopter. It's so sick. So anyway, that's what I want to walk you through these things.
Jesus.
All right. So anyway, the Salvador Trombardi one, right, he took me in front of the house to show me, and that's that first night of January 26th where he was showing me how Paul and him. So I dare this friggin' family send you an email. They're all killers of so many people, so many times, over and over again, right? So anyway, he took me to show me how he did Salvador Trombardi. And this is now in the folklore of the mafia. Oh, the men came from Italy. Oh, they came from New York State. It was a friggin' idiot in January 6, 1967. And where it was is, if we Google map, are you still in Google? Maps, Google. Now, he took me there to show me, and then he stood in front of the house and laughed, and he showed me how he had jumped, like where he had jumped into the next street, and then there were people that actually saw him, because what he did was he parked the SEAL test truck there. Imagine that. So he put Sherman back into Google Maps search there. Sherman, I'll spell it S. S-H-E-R-M-A-N court. And then you put Downsview.
What was the second word?
Downsview, Ontario.
Boundview?
Downsview. D-O-W-N-V-I-E-W. Downsview. Downs. Wait a minute. There's an S. Downs.
Yeah. Is it bound or
down? Yeah,
there.
I found it. It pops up. Sherman. I'll spell it. What pops there? It says Sherman Court. Court. Comma. Downsview. Downsview. Toronto, Ontario. And then you click on that, and then it comes.
Okay.
And then you see where it is. Where it is a very small little street. There, and underneath the A, the red A,
mm-hmm.
It says Besham Crescent,
Peacham
right.
Crescent.
So then start clicking to on the zoom in on the plus sign.
Yeah.
Right, honing in as the center. I'm going to click once, and then you see it says Peacham mm-hmm. Crescent. See that? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So now I'm going to click again, one more on the plus, and then you're closer. Do you see the Peacham? Then it came on that side.
Yep.
So I'll show you, because I'll never forget when he brought me there and showed me. So he parked the SEAL test truck on the Peacham, jumped over the fence and left his fedora, and the fedora, he said, had a New York label. And I said, well, your hair is in there. That was that first night, he said, you know. I said, that's, what do you call it, so many years ago. But did you have your conscience, like your druthers about you, of no hairs on the fedora, right? Because he said what they did was they sent that to Interpol. So Interpol's been sitting on his hat. What happened to the hat with the label? I said, did you put a plastic bag over your head so none of your hairs were in there, or is Interpol hiding? Because that's what he said. He said he didn't run back because there were about, you know, shell casings that he was throwing in the snow there. This was January, right? Like I said, in the 6th of January, 1967. So anyway, now I'm going to go another click on the plus, and I'm going to stop me from doing it. Let me see if I can. Okay, it jumped up the street view, so I can get right in there now. Okay, there it comes. There's the street. I'm on the street now. And you see it's just a dead end, small little court. And then I'll look to the left. I'll use that little circle thing, and I'll go click. Now where it is, I'll show you where it is. You go, oh, wait a minute, I have to go up a bit. So I use that little circle thing. There's a birch tree. And that's where he stood, showing me. So he said, I killed them as right in front of his station wagon, which is right in front of the garage there. There's cement steps. Then I jumped over. There's like a gate there now, but I jumped over. There was no gate at that time, I don't think, right? But anyway, he jumped over. There's a fence between the properties to Beachham Street, and that's where he went. So he was interviewed by the cops at that time. And he said that he had just taken shortcut to deliver the milk. Hello? If witnesses were all saying, hey, we just saw the gunman jump over the fence. We saw the gunman jump over the fence. Are the Toronto police officers all lame? Do you know what he's cost the taxpayer in this city? Billions of dollars, not millions, billions, because I'm going to ask for every accounting of every single investigation that he was ever involved with. Do you think I'm going to live tomorrow? Jesus H. Christ. Anyway, he told me what he did. He wasted this guy with five shots using a .32 semi-automatic. He told me he shot him twice in the neck, in the stomach, one that grazed his arm or shot in the arm, one that grazed the head. He said that goddamn, I'll never forget that. That was that first night. This is after Frank Roberts. He said, holy moly. He said that fucking, pardon my language, I'm swearing again, but I'm just exasperated here.
I understand.
Holy, you know, when you tell this thing to Tony Smith and then he says, I don't know what you're talking about, Detective Sergeant, what the fuck, you know? Anyway, so then I said that this Salvador Trombardi was also packing major big. He had a 7.65 Beretta in a holster on his person, $1,000 in his pocket. Clyde says, shit, that I have to leave that behind, but I wanted to get out of there fast, right? So my brother was with him. My brother was with him. The two of those assholes, because he was the backup person, and jumped over, and this guy, you know, according to what Clyde said, he said the neighbors used to see all of the mafia meetings in there. So when I started seeing what Clyde said, he said, these guys were heavy hitters. The big one at the top there, other than Johnny Pops Papalian, at the time, at that particular time that what do you call it, mafia history, was this guy with the, how do you say, mummified ear in his pocket, Luppino, Guacamo, I guess you pronounce his name, Lupino. right? He was the big godfather of Hamilton area, and then they intermarried. There was the Michel Ratko, right? And that guy's name is or spelled R-A-C-C-O. And anyway, these were, and then came the Camisas. Then they started inner fighting of who owns what. So the Racco family, the guy was wasted. And this is where I say it's so complex that it makes you sick. And I was, you know, wondering what the hell's going on here with this, oh my God, this sick individual here, this cop that doesn't understand where we're coming from, these heavy hitters. These are cases that they didn't want to solve, don't even have in their cold case files. But anyway, what it was is this, what I remember Clyde saying to me is this guy was trying to get, just like the Camisos did, they do arsons, you know, on properties, so they collect the insurance. And there was, I think, a complaint that the police had, you know, investigated, Clyde said, in 1963 that he tried to pull off an arson. Well, the Camisos done multiple that were all, what do you call, inside jobs just to collect. That's the way they get rich, extortion. And then there was an extortion complaint that he got. So, you know, the mob godfathers met, and Salvatore Trambardi had to go, had to go. And then the next one, who was the extortionist, was the other guy that ran, you know, or worked with Salvador Trambardi and his company called Cintar Dry Limited, C-Y-N-A-R Dry Limited. That was the company he had. This is all in the mafia, what do you call it, lore, history, or what do you call it, And you wonder why. So they say, oh, yeah, the guy came from Italy. No, he came from Upper State New York. This is the label. It was a planned execution done by a seasoned killers already, because they did a lot, like Clyde did, a lot of goddamn killings with kids. Clyde did the killings of the kids alone here, and he's the one. And when I said, how much of a killer was my brother? No, he didn't want to do the killings. He just came as backup. He couldn't fathom killing. I said, you're kidding me. You're all the time, so why did you call him? Always, well, just in case something happens to me, that he would take over, backup and driver, right? Holy moly. It makes me so sick when I tell this to Detective Sergeant Tony Smith and he doesn't work on it. I went the year 2000, in the fall, the year 2000, to start telling him about this. And before that, I called Peel, and then I called, like I said, when I started the year 2000, talking about the woman with the eyeballs gouged out. Like, hello, is anyone home there? Are you alive? I hear no reaction.
Oh, well, I'm just stunned.
Well, you know.
I'm stunned. I'm just overwhelmed.
I'm beside myself. You know, the more that he told me, and the fact that I got this disgusting thing as a reply, but not only from that, you know, like I'll say it again. I said it before. Detective Sergeant Tony Smith, in front of the two other cops, Haley. Oh, I don't want to say my last name. Has anyone ever told you you're nuts? And I said, yeah, you for one. Right? And then he says, well, what you have to do now here is have your doctor have you claim, right, that insanity. I said, well, the doctor won't do that. Well, are you going to put a gun to his head? And I said, well, why then would I be dealing with OPP, bringing them information? Why would the FBI want to take my information and then start asking me to work as their agent, right, on these big, big cases? And then Tony Smith's reaction or answer to that was, the FBI is nuts. And then my last words were to him, we'll see who's nuts here. And I walked out. And then before I walked out, he said, see that you don't come back. If you come back into police headquarters, I'll have you arrested for trespassing.
Tony Smith said that?
Mm-hmm. So when I got home, I phoned Adrian Humphreys, and that's the crime writer at National Post, and he said, holy moly, Haley, I'm glad you didn't, you know, get, like, really worked up that you were cool, and you said what you did, because they could have wasted you right at the police headquarters. Have you arrested, put you away. We're talking gulags here. And then you wonder why anyone, you know, like has made a complaint of their sibling or whatever has come forth and said, well, my child or whatever has died in police custody. This has been covered up. So many killings within the police force. These are Masons, for God's sake, that do this code of silence. They do the Omerta code amongst themselves as well. And then the ones that keep the Omerta code going are the ones that rise up in the ranks. So I had serious officers tell me, I don't want to, you know, say this guy's name, but anyway, he said I was in on the Volpe case, and I was so sickened by the corruption, I left because I couldn't handle it. Another female cop said the same, because when I started talking about this in public, a female officer said, yeah, I used to know about this, and I left, and I don't do it anymore. And they said, what Haley's talking about, this woman, this female officer, in front of an audience of about 150 people, and I'll bring her as a witness, said what she has said to you tonight is absolutely true. And that's why I left. The police have been compromised a long time. So, who also, I'll give you his name, tried to break the corruption was my friend, you know, Staff Inspector Ron Sandelli, who had a heavy hat to bear. He had to deal with the RCMP, the OPP, the Metro Cops as a liaison officer. So, you know, probably that's another reason why Clyde didn't kill me, because I kept throwing the name of Ron Sandelli out to him all the time.
Is he still alive?
Sorry?
Is he still alive?
No, he now is the like a security person for the Toronto Blue Jays. But when this case started coming out, you know, with the Francesco Pizzamenti, the other kid that I saw killed was this Norman Crocker, and then another one that the police don't even have, this Ricky O'Toole that went missing. Every single one that he told me, I'm going to log. That's why it's taking me so long. And, you know, they said do one at a time. So I'm starting with one. Let's see if I live to present this. Let's see if I live.
Yeah.
No, it's so shocking. It's beyond comprehension. So you wonder why all of this stuff goes on and people meet year after year, and Nelson Thal comes on the anniversary of Kennedy. Oh, yeah, it's gone on. Well, it's because of people like you whose father, you know, has a foundation, and the foundation, recipients are the Simon Wiesenthal Center, right? The Ben-Gurion. Now, there's things I want to walk you through, too, because it goes back to the company that we were looking at there.
Permindex.
Permindex with the link let me just bring this up. Permindex and Lewis Mortimer Bloomfield. There's a picture that I found with Ben-Gurion shaking the hand of Lewis Bloomfield. So that is the big story. Now, what hit the story about Lewis Bloomfield is people started demanding for the boxes that are at the Canadian Archives, and the family is fighting so it won't be released. It's the same as Conrad Black went into his safe house, right, took the boxes, and then said, you know, you didn't do anything wrong. Makes me laugh, this Conrad Black, the audacity of this guy to try to get rid of the evidence himself. And it's on the camera, and he said, well, I did it just, oh, I went in front. What an excuse this guy found, right? I did it because I wanted everyone to know that I was doing it. I knew the camera was on like hell.
It's
probably trying to shut off the camera, right?
I don't see how you can go outside.
What, today?
No, tomorrow, any day. I just don't see.
Any
day? Yeah.
So what am I going to do?
I don't know.
Lay low?
Fuck.
Fuck, it's right. Jesus, that's why I didn't want you to take me anywhere along this route. This route is heavy, and you put me on international, you're asking for my death to happen. They don't want to go there.
I don't want that.
No. If you're streaming it live, every mob in the world's listening into this now, because they certainly were listening when I was doing that cloak and dagger there.
We aren't streaming anything.
Oh, okay. Because this is sick if this is happening, you know. I don't know where it's going to end, but these guys are heavy hitters that never, ever wanted this stuff to come out. And what they did with the Eddie Mello, oh, the way you spell his name is E-D-D-I-E, and Mello is M-E-L-O. He wanted me to correct it. Now, Clyde did the whole undertaking of this. He's the one who took the cash. They hid the whole case. One guy comes out, said, I did it, Charles Gagnon. Gagnon did a plea with them, and that's why he did the plea was that he wouldn't be implied in the robbery where a police officer was killed. They don't want to do time for police officers. So all these people that were maybe part of this robbery that was in, and then another guy that the whole case has been hidden. I'll give you the other guy that was shot that day was, his name was Portuguese, J-O-A-O, first name, last name. That was the guy that protected Eddie Mello? P-A-V-A-O. And both of them were shot on April the 6th, 2001. And just before that was Chad Winter, right? So this other guy this was all done in secret, you know. Are you taking down the spellings?
Well, I mean.
Okay, because you wanted the proper spellings here.
Yeah.
Anyway, they met this, Camiso that was extradited to Italy, met with this Khalid Sheikh Mohammed at the Wolf's Howl, which was 2399 Cawthra, spelled C-A-W-T-R-A-R-A Road, Mississauga. They met in open. These guys meet in open. And when I saw the droopy eyes, I thought, holy shit, we're talking major terrorists that are wanted worldwide, and this guy's now on the stand right in the United States. I wasn't kidding. So I want the entire mob to be taken down, and the entire Rothschild criminal gang, and a new system brought in. There's got to be worldwide cooperation on all of the police forces.
What are the odds that that's going to happen?
Outrage of every citizen in America. That's why when I had these long discussions with, Jim Morris, he would say, Haley, it's when people are starving, that's when they start wakening up. When they're happy with their, let's watch another video, let's go out shopping, right? They're too relaxed, but when their house is removed, because they've gotten into debt and the bank calls in their variable rates that they can set at any time, people start wakening up. And I think they have in Europe because the people have, en masse done protests in Greece, in Ireland, in England, and on. And the more that people awake, it's got to happen. And it can be done without a wasting away of the entire entire world, land masses here to do this. You know, it's as simple as the police forces going into the Rothschild accounting and say, hey, we now want to have an audit. Why isn't there an audit? Why isn't there a bill that they're waylaid of being audited? None of these heavy hitters ever have their auditing of their true amount of money that they have, whether they've set it up in a foundation, to hide it, and they'd have different names. Like, that's why I say forensic accountants have an awful hard time to find the string. So they keep climbing up, and then they're waylaid to another set of pyramids. And I was cluing into the pyramids. That's why I started working with that Special Agent Lori Allen. She saw that I saw major corporations that were doing this over and over with the Ponzi scheme. But I said some of these corporations were wise to the shredding system to get rid of the evidence. They would shred everything. So, but there's got to be at some point. That's why I think when that story came about, the Lewis Bloomfield came into the Toronto Star's newspaper. I thought, is anyone here astute enough to seize the police to seize the files from the National Archives, to seize them, to protect them, or already have they been shredded? You know, I don't want to say so sad, too bad. We didn't snap out of our hypnotized state because of all the shit that's going down all the time. And that's why they do it over and over with this trauma on the television. We're waylaid to our pursuit. My pursuit, I'm honing in. I want to solve the cases. So I'm honing in on one at a time, be it what it may. But anyway, so yeah, I wanted to take it here just to, for you to know about was this. An excellent site there. It's called the Constantine, Alex Constantine. Mm-hmm. And he goes into all of this stuff with the Lewis Bloomfield and on. It goes into May Brussels, right?
So you talked about this on Cloak and Dagger, did you, among other things?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the first thing, see, I was too scared to use my voice. That's the way I met David Icke. Icke, the way I met him, I don't know if I told you. He had done an interview with Nelson saying, has anyone out there in Cyberland or, is listening to this radio station, has ever seen a shape-shifting individual? So Nelson says, go for it, Haley. Go over there. And then the guy there, who's the switcher, will take your call first as if you're calling as a person that's, in Toronto. So this was funnier than hell what I did there, right? So I was trying to use my brain, and I thought, what will I say to Ike about that? So this just came to me cold turkey as I was there in the little lounge area outside the studio. So I waited on the phone until the switcher rang me, and then I said, hello, do we have a... Oh, no, sorry. Let me get my accent. Wait. Yeah. Mr. Ike, have I got your attention? Is that Mr. Ike there? Or something I said. Oh, yeah. And then Ike said, what's your name? And I said, my name, Mr. Ike, is Scarlet Pippernell. And I do declare, sir, that I've seen a shape-shifting individual. He's a contract killer, a hitman, and a Vatican assassin. And when he gets into his killing mode, he shapeshifts. And Ike says, well, what does he look like? And I said, sort of like Gollum, you know, in the Lord of the Rings. That's why I called Clyde a toad. So anyway, what happened is Ike on the air yells, I need to speak to that woman, he yells in his British accent. Please get me her phone number. And that's how I met David Ike. Funny, eh?
Mm-hmm.
That's another name. Scarlet Pippa now, because you know the spy was?
Yeah.
You know, that one. So it just came to me, the Scarlet thing, right? Putting it as if I was from Gone with the Wind. And that's how I met one person after another. So on the Cloak and Dagger, I started talking about the Singer missiles. I started talking about the Frank Roberts case, because I said on the Frank Roberts case, we have judges involved here. We've got, you know, people that want to collect that are families that want the big coin. $5 million was paid out in insurance. It's all about the insurance. It's always about arson insurance or you know, life insurance. These are the way these people have money. And that's the way the mob has come about. You know, extortion, gambling, arson, and on and on. And it's just racketeering, casino gambling, and holy moly. Anyway, I have no words for this, but
let's call it a Christmas.
Yeah, let's call it a Christmas. Merry Christmas. Wake up, people.
Merry Christmas, Haley.
You know, we have a Merry Christmas there.
Merry Christmas.
Yeah. Professor Fetzer, I honor you that you started that book, you know, part of the pulling of the thread with the murder of Dealey Plaza, because I thought, you know, when you first spoke to me, I thought, hey, this guy is honest. You know, he's a heavy hitter. He's relentless. He's teaching the course. He wants to know the truth. The truth has to be found out. All the guys that have been covering this up have to be revealed. So whether, you know, the ones that are honest can overtake the unhonest ones, let's see. But anyway, yeah, we'll go over this, you know, after whatever. That's all I'm going to do. I've got to hone in what I said, but I'm not going out tomorrow for anything.
Yes.
And like all of these cops said, if you know, but I already demanded, you know, what I did. I told you what I demanded of them, right? You don't start giving this shit and then having, like, Yvonne Verrou asking for protection. She doesn't get it, and then she's on the, you know, a little small rural area, you know, a little roadway that's barely used, and their body's there in the cold winter. This is when she begged the police to help her. And there's never been any protection given. They've wasted. And then the laughter is what's the worst of the lot. But anyway, have a good night.
Thank you, Haley. You too.
Yeah, so I'll talk to you. I'll just keep in touch whenever, okay?
Okay. Thanks.
Okay.
Thanks.
Good night. Bye.
Bye.